Welcome. Welcome to everyone here. We're going to get it started now. I'm Felicia Mayo. I'm the Vice President of Global Talent Acquisition, as well as Authenticity and Inclusion at Juniper Networks. And I have to tell you, we are thrilled to be co-chairs here at the Watermark Conference, and I'm also personally thrilled to be here to support the advancement of women leaders from across the state and from our community. Juniper Networks is sponsoring the Watermark Conference for Women because it links to our core values. We believe diversity is key to innovation. Innovation is our business. Therefore, diversity is our business. The Conference for Women offers a blend of practical tools and advice, inspiration, and peer networking. Through a mix of sessions, we are committed to your empowerment to inspire you to make your mark in and for your companies, your careers, and your communities. So again, thank you for participating in the breakout session, Broadcasting Happiness, Creating Success Through Positive Engagement. That is the session that you are in, so we will be closing the doors. We have an amazing hour in store for you. Now I am excited to introduce Michelle Gielen. I'll tell you a bit about Michelle. Michelle is a national CBS news anchor turned positive psychology researcher. She is the best-selling author of Broadcasting Happiness. And Gielen is the founder of the Institute of Applied Positive Research and is partnered with Arianna Huffington to study how transformative stories fuel success. She is an executive producer of The Happiness Advantage, special on PBS, and a feature professor in Oprah's Happiness Course, which we heard a little bit about this morning from your husband. Gielen earned a Master of Applied Positive Psychology from the University of Pennsylvania, and her research and advice has received attention from the New York Times, the Washington Post, Forbes, CNN, Fox, and the Harvard Business Review. Please put your hands together and welcome Michelle Gielen.
Thank you so much. Oh, I am just so thrilled to be here with all of you. I'm so grateful to get the chance to share with you the exciting science of happiness and how we use it to fuel success in our own lives. Success to me means being able to be comfortable on stage. And so you might be thinking, wow, that's an interesting fashion choice. Right? Hot dress, hot boots don't necessarily go together. I'm going to Salt Lake City for a talk tomorrow, and I thought, let's pack the boots. Thank goodness I did. I wore myself out in my heels this morning, and I said, I've got important stuff to be talking about with these women, and I want to be able to have my brain fully there and not be thinking, oh my gosh, blisters. So you heard two words in my bio you do not often hear in the same sentence, right? News and happiness. As a matter of fact, I was in New York at one point for a talk with Samsung. I love New York. When this got put on the calendar, I'm like, yes! Okay, cool. I love everything about it. The big buildings, the energy of the city, the yellow cabs. And so when I land at LaGuardia and I get in the back of the cab and I see a television screen with the news, I cannot wait to hear what's going on in New York. And this is what I hear. Topping today's news, four people were stabbed on the subway. There's been an outbreak of disease-carrying rats in Lower Manhattan, and rents are on the rise again across the city. Oh my gosh. So by the time I get to my talk in Midtown, I'm thinking, am I gonna get mugged on the subway by a rat with Ebola who can't even afford an apartment? Oh, what is going on here? But it's not just New York, right? How many of you have, especially in today's times, in some ways slowed down watching your local news? Yeah, okay. Okay, so I think what you are intuiting is that negative messages can have a negative effect on our health, our happiness, our stress levels. And you are right. In a study that I recently completed with Sean Acor, who you all saw this morning, who also happens to be my husband, and Arianna Huffington, we found that just 3 minutes of negative news in the morning can lead to a 27% higher likelihood of you reporting a bad day. That's as reported 6 to 8 hours later. Okay? So what's significant about that is that that mood and mindset that we adopt in the morning as we stay informed can actually stick with us through our time at work, our time with our families. We feel the negative effects sometimes, even when we're cooking dinner that night. So when I was at CBS News, I got tired of talking about the negative and only focusing on the negative, bringing everyone problem, 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 with no talk of solutions. And so I left. I went to study positive psychology at the University of Pennsylvania. And the thing is, while there, I actually had this epiphany about all of you, about all of us, which is that the power that I could see at work while broadcasting the news to influence others was not something that was reserved for news broadcasters, professional athletes, celebrities. This is a power we all have. All of you, each of you, are broadcasters. Every single moment, as you move throughout your day, you're transmitting information to other people. And the messages that you choose to broadcast either create success or hold us back. We influence our own thinking. We influence the thinking of our team members, of our colleagues, our family, our friends, in everything we say, and even sometimes the things we say with our face, right? When we're not saying that much, our nonverbals can transform other people as well. Thank you to the woman over there who's nodding, because that nonverbal makes me feel like, all right. Thank you. So what I'm excited to do today is to talk to you about the research that we've been doing that looks how when we can get our brain to a positive, empowered, engaged state, and we broadcast that message to the people around us, how that influences every single business and educational outcome that we know how to track. I'm talking about raising our levels of productive energy by 31%, raising our chances of promotion over the next year by 40%, decreasing the negative effects of stress, headaches, backaches, fatigue by as much as 23%. Significant studies coming out of this body of research from positive psychology and neuroscience, stuff you don't often hear about on the news. And how when we start to focus on making small shifts the way we communicate, we can not only create that success for ourselves and for other people. So in order to understand how to get that happiness advantage, and by broadcasting happiness, I'd love to share with you an experience that I had while working in news. Because it was, for me, that inflection point that helped illuminate why this research can be so powerful. So I am a happiness researcher. I did not start off that way. I actually started off as a computer engineer writing code at a .com that I worked for. And I would write that code with this big thought bubble over my head, dreaming about being a network news anchor broadcasting from New York City. Ah. Those dreams are great. But for any of you who either have been in journalism, know anyone in journalism, you do not start your career in New York. You start anywhere they'll take you. So I sent about 150 tapes around the country, and I got one call. Oh, it was big. So I moved to El Paso, Texas, and I... and I cut my teeth there. I worked such an amazing schedule there as a new reporter. It got me to thinking about these deep philosophical questions. When you begin your newscast at 3 in the morning, do you start with buenas noches or buenos dias? Now, the exciting part of the story is what would normally take someone about a decade, I was able to go from El Paso to Chicago to New York to CBS News. In 3 years. Now, I credit that meteoric rise to hard-hitting investigative pieces. Ladies, I know you all saw them. Bedbugs take over mattresses across Chicagoland. Skin-eating fish make for a better pedicure. My personal favorite, my biting interview with the Dalai Lama. Oh, no, wait, actually, it was Dolly the Llama. Yeah, this live interview went down at a petting zoo. So the reason I tell you about that short timeline is that when I got here to CBS News, I was still full of hope and optimism about the good work that we could do, given our reach and resources, the power to influence people. My mission was always to empower people with the information they need to make the best decisions of their lives. Problem is that my newscasts were full of stories of murder, death, destruction, natural disasters, bank failures, corruption, et cetera, and then the recession hit, and it was one story after another, emotional stories of people losing their homes, their jobs, their retirement savings, so much fear, so much insecurity. And I thought, there's gotta be a better way, right? So I started to analyze the newscast and look at the amount of negativity to positivity, because we all hear, oh, the news is too negative, right? But was it that, or was there something deeper going on there? And this is what I came to see in those earlier days. A barrage of negative news, whether it's on the news, in our businesses, with our teams, around the water cooler, in our own thinking, a barrage of negative information feeds us this lie that our behavior doesn't matter. Think about it. Problem, 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 with no talk of solutions. And literally our brain starts to believe that nothing we do will make a difference. Yes, there are millions of things in this world that are beyond our control. The problem is when our brain starts to believe that all things are beyond our control. I had started to see that ever since covering this story back in Chicago. So the night that this happened, there was a shooting in Englewood. Okay, Englewood, if any of you know Chicago well, it's a neighborhood known for gangs, guns, and drugs. And so the night that this happened, you know, we did sort of the typical story that you would do. Stray bullet from gang gunfire blasted through the living room window of a house. In that house, there was a birthday party going on. The bullet hit this little girl in the head, instantly killing her. She was one day shy of turning 11 years old. Right? So we told this sensational story of a girl snatched before her time. My boss calls me, job well done, very good, right? It wasn't until 1 week later when I'm in the church for the funeral that I started to see the other story emerging. And it was actually a story that had been there the entire time. What I saw physically before me was a group of women, presumably the other mothers from the neighborhood, surrounding the mother who had just lost her daughter. They were hugging her, and they were all swaying together to songs of prayer. It was so beautiful. So it was in that moment that I started to see, in the midst of this tragedy, there's this gorgeous, beautiful story of this incredible community coming together and supporting this mother through literally her life's toughest challenge. Yes, Englewood is not necessarily a desirable neighborhood, but if you look at the stats, it's getting better thanks to coordinated efforts by police, leaders, and citizens every single day. In the midst of the pain and desperation, there was this hope and this optimism and this resilience. So what happens if we start focusing the story on that, at least in equal parts? But what happens if the focus is even more so on that side, that part that gives us this breath, that allows us to have that energy to create positive change? And so that's when I saw that in any moment of our day, we have opportunities to talk about the paralyzing aspects of our lives, of struggles, of issues, or in that same moment, also focusing on the energizing parts, right? Because one story leaves us paralyzed, the other rallied to take action. All equally true facts, but where's our focus? And what does that do for our businesses, for our families, for our children? Changing our story changes our power. Just like journalists, we can fall into the trap of focusing too much on the negative, right? It's a very common thing for human beings because we have this really strong negativity bias that we must continually, hopefully, overcome. It keeps us safe. We don't want to ignore the negative, but we just don't want to focus so much on it that we're cutting ourselves off from achieving the things and solving the life's toughest challenges. And so at CBS News, I decided, let's do an experiment. You guys are going to find out how much I love experiments in a little bit. I hope you'll participate. Did you have fun with the smiling experiment this morning? Yes, he sets you up thinking like your partner's going to punch you or something. I love it. Anyway, so I'm glad I didn't see anyone punching anybody, which is very good. So at CBS News, we thought, let's do an experiment. And basically, every time we served up a problem, we served up a potential solution. Problem, solution. Your kids are stressed out at school and not doing well because you and your partner are fighting over financial issues. We've got an expert to give you some ideas on how to have better conversations, right? All of this revolved around the recession. So we tackled some of the biggest issues that people were facing at that time, and then we brought in experts from the field of positive psychology to focus on how we can take action to create that positive change. And that's what opened my eyes to positive psychology. As Sean mentioned a little bit earlier this morning, positive psychology is a scientific study of happiness and human potential. It's the best in us. It's what's working. We need to understand what's working in order to create more of it, right? So psychology, as usual, has an exceptionally important place in our lives and in understanding who we are. We need to understand diseases, disorders, depression, in order to bring people back to baseline. But what about when we're at baseline? How do we help people flourish? And that's why I'm so thankful to Dr. Martin Seligman from Penn, who created this field to kind of give it an official name. And he said at the time, let's move from focusing so much of our research efforts on merely the problems, and let's look at how we're flourishing. At the time, it was 17 research studies on the negative to every one on the positive. And now at least we're starting to see a little bit more of a balance, which I think ultimately is so good for humankind. So since then, I run a research institute. We partner with academic institutions, including Stanford down the road here. And we ask some questions about our mindset. How can we get our mindset to the best place it possibly can be in order to make success easier for us, in order to feel highest levels of productive energy, in order to feel deeper levels of connection with other people, a sense of purpose and meaning in the work that we do? And so I'd like to share with you the findings of one of the studies that we've done, because I'd like you to see how, you know, think about how your mind operates in this realm. And also, I think you're probably going to think about a friend or a partner or a colleague and how their mind works as well. So we developed something called the success scale. And the success scale, which I want to give you access to towards the end of the talk, is a 30-question assessment that tests for the three greatest predictors of long-term levels of success at work. And so I'll go through each one of these. Work optimism is the belief that your behavior matters in the face of challenge, and it's the expectation of good things to happen. Okay, so think about it. When a challenge strikes at work, when you start getting stressed out, where does your mind go? How do you process a challenge? How do you think about it? Work optimists are significantly more likely to be highly engaged in their jobs, 5 times less likely to burn out. These are people who score on the sort of top quartile of the work optimism scale. And as Sean shared with you that very funny story, which I often share too, about the being in the car with the guy in the seatbelt this morning, right? You know, I love that story because it illuminates this idea of how, you know, we want to be optimistic. We see the scientific value of it in our businesses and in our relationships, but we don't want to do it to the detriment of ignoring the negative. Because ignoring the negative fuels an ability to make some bad decisions. It means you're out of touch. By the way, there is a certain percentage of the population who are happy all the time. You might have a friend like that. But actually, technically, that's a disorder. so we don't get to study people like that. For the rest of us, the more that we can invest in our optimism, the more that we actually see it improves health outcomes and relationship and business outcomes as well. So positive engagement is your story about stress. Do you, when you get in encounter a stressful event, do you go into this sort of threat mode, right? Or do you look at it as a challenge? Our brain responds completely differently depending on which one we end up experiencing. So if we view it as a threat, our brain goes into fight or flight, and we're basically having a fight or flight response to a fight or flight response. It's really interesting. We get flooded with cortisol and dopamine, and it's not really the best place to be making all those decisions or working on projects. Meanwhile, if we can flip our response and we look at it as a challenge, then our brain gets flooded with dopamine and our brain gets turned on to the highest levels of learning that it possibly can. It's what you want. That state is ideal when dealing with problems and problem solving. So in a follow-up study to the one where we basically found that negative news kills you, Ariana, Sean, and I looked at the influence of exposing people, not just to problems, but actually talking about solutions. And I love this study because it shows that there's such a significant response in our brain when we start thinking about the solutions. If you just take some time to read about solutions to a problem. In this case, the problem was hunger in America, right? Many U.S. cities are grappling with rising food insecurities and homelessness. And so the problem article that we exposed the control group to, it was one statistic after another about this problem, and that was it. We just left them there, right? We tested them before and after. With the experimental group, we said, here are all those same statistics, same problem, same issue, right? But then we went on to share five potential or actual solutions they could take right now in their community to help solve the problem. Fundraise, donate to a local food bank. So we just started brainstorming some ideas for them and then again tested them before and after. The group that had been exposed to those solutions actually experienced a 20% increase in creative problem-solving abilities on subsequent unrelated tasks. So what that means is when we start to look at our problems as challenges, if we're a manager and we talk to our team about the problems, but we also talk about solutions, we actually show it empowerment in one domain that gets imported to another unrelated domain later in the day. So we're better at doing our work if our meeting is solutions focused earlier in the day. And so for positive engagement, when we change our relationship to stress, that's when we can experience that 23% drop in stress-related symptoms. We ran a study at UBS, stressed out managers, split them into two groups. One group got the typical stress management training. Here's what you do to deal with it. The other group, the training was simple. And I mean, it was a 3-hour training, but to distill it down into just a few phrases, it was see the stress, own it, and use it. So we helped the participants build awareness around when they're stressed, and then see the advantages to being stressed in that moment. The advantages are it improves creative problem-solving abilities and cognitive functioning, memory, energy. There are some advantages. I'm not advocating go and find stress. But when you're in the midst of it, there are some advantages, actually. The body and brain can perform well in the midst of it. So we talked about that, and then they learned how to use it. 4 months later, very stressful time in the business. Stress level is the same for both groups, but that second group that had gone through that training, just by shifting their mindset around stress, ended up reporting a significant drop in how they were dealing, in the negative effects of it, which I think is so inspiring. And this last one is support provision. We thought at first, hey, if you're going to be successful at your organization, we need to know how much the organization's being supportive of you, right? If you need a listening ear, how likely is a colleague to sit down with you and talk about it? If you're falling behind on your work, do you have all the resources you need to catch back up? Is someone going to help you, et cetera? And while those numbers and that information was predictive of long-term levels of success at work, when we flipped the formula, that's when things got interesting. If your colleague is falling behind on their work, how likely are you to help them? If someone needs a listening ear, how likely are you to say, hey, come hang out in my cubicle. Let's have a, you know, like coffee together and let's talk about it. By understanding how much support we give to other people, we then can understand on a deeper level how successful we can be, so much so that the people who score in that top quartile, when we tracked a large group of them cross-industry over the next year, those people were 40% more likely to receive a promotion. Best part about this research and these elements of our mindset, they're all malleable. And so what I'd love to do is spend the rest of the time we have together talking about three ways that you can build work optimism, positive engagement, and support provision in a way that's actually beneficial for the people around you as well, because, again, you're broadcasters. Common wisdom seems to suggest that in order to create great change in our life, we have to focus on all the problems and fix them, right? Performance reviews. Okay, that's nice. You said a couple nice things about me, but really what? Okay, tell me the real deal, right? And then that's the thing you think about for the next 3 months. Why am I a 4 out of 5? I don't understand, right? But what we're now seeing from the research, there's an incredibly strong case that shows us that sometimes, yes, it is important to focus on the negative and work on improving ourselves in those domains, but sometimes it's even better to focus on what we're doing right and leverage all of that in a way that benefits us and the people around us. Okay, so you know that Sean and I love experiments, and so if you're willing to participate, I would love for you, first of all, to sit up straight. Okay, excellent. All right, now slump back down for a second. Whoa, it feels weird, right? Okay, good. Sit up straight. You have great posture. If you, like me, are a huge fan of Amy Cuddy and have seen her TED Talk, she's awesome. I met her in person, by the way, and I was like a fangirl. It was awful, so embarrassing. I'm like, oh my God, I talk about you all the time. I love your research. She's like, whoa, get off of me. So she talks about the fact that when her research has found that when you adopt a power pose, right, great posture, and she shows you some of the specific poses, that it actually changes your chemical makeup. So it lowers your levels of cortisol, raises your levels of testosterone. You're welcome, single gentlemen over there. Oh, a few of them over there. Okay. That's the testosterone section. And it makes you more likable and capable if you were to go into an interview situation or have a meeting. Okay, so now that ladies and gentlemen, that now that you look absolutely gorgeous, what I would love for you to do is I want you to partner up with someone sitting near you. The key to this is to find somebody who's not going to look better than you on television. So if you need to move around, it's okay. All right, find a partner. Person number one, you're sitting closest to this side of the room. Person number two, you're sitting closest to this side of the room. Who's person number one? Person number two. Okay, I was there for that struggling bank Wall Street thing. It's true. All right, so person number one, I'm going to show you a sentence on the screen. And what I would love for you to do is to say it to person number two. When they're done, person number two, you say it back to person number one. But here's the thing, ladies, and a couple guys. I want you to say it with feeling and emotion. Go. I was listening to the ladies in the first few rows, and You all did really, really well. So very good. In broadcasting, when we're broadcasting to influence other people, you're taught that there are two different ways to say this sentence. One is ideal and one is less so. Okay, so you can either emphasize the main word, to do it with high levels of influence, you want to emphasize the main word versus the modifier. The main word is good. The modifier is so. So listen to the difference. It's so good to see you versus it's so good to see you. Right? It's different there. Except, by the way, I gave this talk in front of about 650 of my closest friends, and I never get questions at this point. This young woman in the front row raises her hand. She's like, wait. I think there's a third way that you could say that sentence. I was like, huh. Yeah, I can hear them. Right? And I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm having trouble picturing it. She said, you could emphasize the word you. I said, could you do it for me? I'm having trouble picturing it. And she said, sure. It's so good to see you. Stand corrected. All right. And for this last part of the experiment, what I would love for you to do is I'm going to show you a tongue twister on the screen. I do not want you to wait for your neighbor. I want you to beat everyone else in this room. I want you to say it as fast as you possibly can. Go. Oh, wow. Wow, when the organizers contacted me, they said this was PG. Wow. Okay, good. Okay, so there's good news and then there's other news. The good news is that you all did amazing. The other news is this is predictive of nothing. Okay, so... But this is a fun exercise to see how, if you were to experience sort of media training or, you know, media diagnostics similar to what I got when I arrived at CBS, this is the entry level version, right? This is what you give to CEOs who keep sticking their foots in their mouth. They're like, keep your mouth nice and loose, all right. So what I want to do is give you the graduate level version. And I got so excited about all this that I skipped over something, and I would love to go back, which is this. Okay, so when we broadcast this positive mindset, this is what happens. This is a snippet of the research, and it is so incredibly exciting. Doctors who have been primed to be positive, this could be you coming in as a patient, prime that doctor to be positive, they come up with a correct diagnosis 19% faster and more accurately than doctors at neutral. Wow, I'm not waiting for my doctor to give me this cute little lollipop. I'm bringing him a huge one, right? Managers who simply start focusing their team on all that they're already doing right by praising one person new and different each day, a specific piece of praise within earshot of others. Really simple. They've been able, in one study, to raise the entire team's level of productivity and productive energy by 31%. What an influence. Sales professionals who are optimistic and are expressive of that mindset to their clients, to their potential clients, to their colleagues, they've been able to enjoy 37% higher levels of sales. Another study follow-up, this was done by my professor at Penn, it was by as much as 56%. This was incredible. MetLife decided in an experiment to hire a rogue group of highly optimistic sales professionals and then track them over the course of the year. They were losing a lot of money because they kept hiring people, training them, and then some would leave. They had to do the whole process over again. It was kind of a waste of a lot of people's times, right? And so they said, we've got to figure out, how can we screen for the right people before we put them in the position? Well, guess what? This rogue group, this 10% of new hires, outsold over the next year the other 90%, by another 89%. The only differentiator for that group was these folks were highly optimistic. Their conversations were different. They believed that their behavior matters. They connected deeply with the people around them. That's what creates success, and it makes people want to work with you or buy your product. And lastly, who here has children? Yes. Okay, as you heard Sean said, we have a little one. He's turning 3 in February. His name is Leo. More people to experiment on. And he's the light of my life. I adore him. And so when he's 4 or 5, I'm going to try this experiment. If you have kids who are still 4 or 5, you can go home and try it out. Kids who were primed to be positive. So here we go. Did you have Jell-O for lunch today? That's it. Okay, it's that easy. Then ask them to put together a set of blocks. They'll put it together 50% faster than the kids at neutral. Spatial memory, it even impacts spatial memory. And there's no stressed condition in that experiment, because that's just mean. And then when you start doing this on an organizational-wide level, you start to see the value of happiness for the company, for teams, and for individuals. I'm most interested for individuals, right? Because we've only got one life to live. We want a deep and meaningful and happy life. And as you heard Sean define happiness, it's not the pleasure from a chocolate bar, right? Because that's pleasure, and then that's like, oh, pain. Why did I just eat that for like the next day, right? So it's not that kind of pleasure. It's that deep, soulful pleasure, that joy that comes from growing towards our potential. So at Nationwide Brokerage Services, we did some work with them, and I'll tell you something. And so I know there's a lot of consultants in the room. I, if you have not been exposed to this warm welcome, may you never experience it. But we walked into this company, and the president of the company was like, oh, happiness research. That's bluff. Okay, that's really doesn't make me feel excited about talking to you about this. But I also knew that he was a numbers guy. I love numbers, as you can tell. And so we presented a research-based case on why he might want to consider infusing positivity and happiness research into his organization, very much along the same lines that we're doing. And what he ended up doing was they rewrote basic business practices. This is a really concrete takeaway I'll give you right now. One of my favorites was something called the morning huddle. Oh, okay, so recently I was invited to give a talk at Google's Rework conference. If you're looking for inspirational videos, there's like these, like everyone who spoke that day was amazing. I was so excited to be in the room with them. And so I'm like totally nervous, right? They gave me 10 minutes to present my case, and I practiced a gajillion times. And I get there, and I'm like in the middle of my talk, and I was like, you know when you have like the internal dialogue while you're saying stuff, and I was like, okay, this is actually going decently well. I haven't forgot anything I wanted to say. And then I'm like, and so at Nationwide Brokerage Services, they did the morning cuddle. It's on YouTube forever. You can look it up. Anyway, point is, morning huddle. Sales teams, get off your phones. Let's meet together and talk about 2 things. Let's celebrate successes that the entire team might not have heard about. And then let's give a chance for people who need a little extra support that day to speak up. And then we'll rally around them and give them that support in any way we can, right? Successes and solutions. So awesome. Cut to 1.5 years later, as we're tracking metrics, the new insurance application rate, this is an insurance company, new insurance application rate went up by 237% in that 18-month period. Gross revenues went up by 50%, not a small 50%, hundreds of millions of dollars. And all of that from infusing happiness research. So that was kind of a fun conversation with that president, right? He's like, okay, yeah, it's not so much fluff. It's not so much fun. I was like, I'm glad you think about it. I think that. That makes me happy. Okay, so some of the things that were done at Nationwide and that you can easily do, let me share them with you now. Okay, so the first one is this idea of the power lead. If you want to transform your conversations and build higher levels of work optimism, this is your quickest bet. All the strategies we'll be talking about today are easy, simple things that you can do that rewrite conversations and empower other people to feel as if they can have more positive conversations with you. The power lead's taken from my days in media. If it bleeds, it leads. That's how producers do their newscasts. We want to take the opposite approach. What is your top story? How do you begin your broadcast to people? How do you answer the question, hey, how are you? Right? Huge. So when we answer with something negative, there are only two ways for people to respond. Oh, I'm so sorry you're experiencing that, right? Which I've told Sean is always the correct approach. Or people play misery poker with you. Oh, you think your commute was bad? Let me tell you about mine, right? Either way, the conversation is going like this. Okay, again, not ignoring the negative. If you have a real problem, of course we want to discuss it with people we trust. But in general, what are we putting out there? As a researcher, if I know the first few words of a conversation, I can predict the outcome with a high degree of likelihood. We influence people in mere seconds. There was a great study that showed that if you put three people, strangers, into a room for just 2 minutes, have them sit down in silence, which is totally awkward, and you test their mood before and after, the most non-verbally expressive person will actually significantly influence the mood of the two other people in the room. That person sitting with arms crossed, scowling, got a frown on their face, the other people feel more negative. The person's light and relaxed and maybe is smiling, that positively influences the people around them. We've all been in that meeting with that negative person. Oh, and even if they're not saying anything, you know, right? It speaks volumes. So the best way to combat their negativity is by leveraging your positivity and broadcasting along that the lines of, we've got a problem, we can fix it. Let's brainstorm together. I got to tell you about this really cool thing that's going on in my life. Hey, you're my client. We have a new service that we're offering, and I am so excited to talk to you about it because it's changed our other clients' lives, right? So having that builds connection, that builds bridges with other people. If you asked me yesterday, or if you asked me this morning, hey, how are you, right? I would say, yesterday I would have said, like, oh, I'm doing great. I had breakfast with my son this morning. He was being so cute, right? Something simple and meaningful. This morning it would have been like, oh, I'm doing great. I had breakfast by myself, and it was awesome. And if we don't think these little words mean big, what does this list make you think of? This does not work with international audiences, unfortunately. Found out the hard way. Okay, so bingo, wrinkle, Florida wise gray, subtle primes of age, right? You guys saw it. You're smart. 20-year-old college students got split into two groups for a research study. One group played around with these words, did a word game for 5 minutes. The other group played around with dog, cat, and house, neutral words. And then, one by one, each of them were asked to walk down the hallway where part two of the experiment was happening in another room. The only thing is that part two of the experiment was actually happening in the hallway. We love deception. And the students that had played around, these are healthy college students, right, had played around with these subtle primes of age for just 5 minutes, they actually walked slightly slower and more hunched over than the other students. Okay, so we don't want to prime our colleagues for walkers because that would not be good. But when we choose our words carefully, like just inserting the word together into a set of instructions for a new project that we're working on, a Stanford study found that simple word transformed how long people worked, how hard they worked. They were 48% longer when they just had that mental concept that we're working as a team together on this project. It's transformative. So I encourage you, when you are asked, hey, how are you? Think about your top story. What was the best part of your day you can share? What's one thing you're grateful for? Tell them something good going on, and then see how that then takes the lead on the conversation and allows the other person to match in kind in a really transformative way. It's those small things that I believe rewrite corporate culture. Okay, for this next one, I want you to watch this video. It's called The Color Changing Card Trick, and see if you can figure out what's going on here.
Hi, I'm Richard, this is Sarah, and we're going to perform the amazing color changing card trick with this blue-backed deck of cards. Now, the idea is very simple. I'm just going to spread the cards in front of Sarah and ask her to push any card towards the camera.
Right, okay, let's see. I'm going to go for this card here.
Okay. Now, Sarah could have selected any card at all from the deck. But she selected the card, which is now face down on the table. And what I'm going to ask her to do is show us which card she selected.
Right, so the card that I chose was in fact the Three of Diamonds.
The Three of Diamonds, okay, an excellent choice. That card goes back into the deck. Now I'm just going to spread the cards face up on the table. Do a little click of the fingers, and you'll see that Sarah's card here has now got a blue back. Not particularly surprising, what's slightly more surprising is all of the other cards have got red backs. And that is the amazing color-changing card trick.
Did anyone see what happened? Okay, watch this.
Hi, I'm Richard. This is Sarah. And we're going to perform the amazing color-changing card trick with this blue-backed deck of cards. Now, the idea is very simple. I'm just going to spread the cards in front of Sarah and ask her to push any card towards the camera.
Right, okay, let's see. I'm going to go for this card here.
Okay. Now, Sarah could have selected any card at all from the deck, but she selected the card which is now face down on the table. What I'm going to ask her to do is show us which card she selected.
Right, so the card that I chose was, in fact, the Three of Diamonds.
The Three of Diamonds, okay, excellent choice. That card goes back into the deck. Now I'm just going to spread the cards face up on the table. Do a little click of the fingers, and you'll see that Sarah's card here has now got a blue back. Not particularly surprising, what's slightly more surprising is all of the other cards have got red backs. And that is the amazing color-changing card trick.
How many of you saw the 500-pound gorilla in that second video? Yes! Okay, so that was called the color-changing card trick. And it said it on the screen, and he said it, right? So what are you looking for to happen? The cards to change color, right? This is such a beautiful example that shows us that sometimes we can be so focused on one part of our reality that we miss other things simultaneously happening, right? Our brains are incredible processors. We can process 40 to 50 bits of information every single second of the day. The challenge is that from all of our nerve endings, we're bombarded by more than 11 million bits of information every second of the day. So what that means is inherently there are choices, choices in how we devote our attention. And just like that news story that I told you about in Englewood, what we choose to focus our attention on creates our success or not. It's the fuel that we use, right? So now we see that focusing on the positive, empowering, optimistic parts of our reality can be so fueling. What happens when we hit a road bump? We're stressed. We're down. We're not feeling that great. How can we get ourselves out of it using one of these tools? So the second strategy I wanted to share with you today is something called fact-checking. When we have a story, we have to ask ourselves, is this story working for us? Is it working for us? If we're feeling stressed about something, it's not working for us. It's not. So this is a three-step process. First two steps, very easy. Third step is the stretch. And this will help you rethink a stressful or negative thought in a way that can help move you forward. It calms your brain down and gets you focused on what you can do about it. So the first step is to isolate the negative or stressful thought. We've got to know what we're talking about before we can do it. And we'll run through an example in just a second. And then the second step is to write down all the facts that prove that that thought's true. If you're stressing about something, this list is going to be very easy. And then, and this is the stretch, we want to create a list of facts that show us a new story, that illuminate a new story, right? So here's a very practical example. I'm never going to finish this project in time. I'm never going to finish this project in time, right? We've all been there. We've got a deadline, and we're totally stressed out about it. Well, yeah, I'm never going to finish this project in time. I've got an extremely heavy workload. My colleagues are all swamped, too, so I can't even ask anyone to help me. I've got my son's recital later this week. I cannot miss it. And by the way, did I tell you, I'm, like, working on, like, 5 hours sleep the last few nights. I'm exhausted. never going to finish this project in time. Yeah, you know what? If our brain is focused on that set of facts, absolutely we could come to that conclusion. So what other facts can we see that can help move us forward? So here's an example. Okay, well, to be fair, I have been at this company for 4 years now, and I've never needed a deadline extension before. You know, those guys are really busy, but actually there's three other people that I could probably ask them to help me with certain parts of this project. And, oh, you know what? I wrote a similar proposal last week, and I got good feedback on it. I could use that template as a jumping off point. And if I add up the number of work hours from 9 to 6 between now and the deadline, I've actually got more than 20 hours I could devote to this project. Huh. Right? Equally true facts. One helps us feel more calm and ready to move forward. It illuminates a new story. We don't want to fight the old story. We just want to try to help our brain see the new story. So next time you feel stressed, or someone comes to you with a stress, working through this process can be incredible. And if you're smart ladies, I'd write it down, because I don't know about you, but I stress about the same 7 types of things over and over. So now I've got my homework done for me. I just whip out the piece of paper. I'm like, okay, done, right? It's 30 seconds as opposed to like 5 hours of like a little hamster on a treadmill. Ugh. So anyway, and this, by the way, builds positive engagement, because it's changing our story about stress. It's changing our response to stress. You do this with somebody else and walk them through it, I think it can be incredibly transformative. And I want to share with you this research. To me, this particular strategy holds a really close place in my heart, because when I was in my mid-20s, I experienced a year-long bout with depression. And I was like on top of the world, awesome job in London, amazing, great boyfriend, jet setting everywhere. And I worked from home. I'm a social person. I had no friends. I was disconnected. And it was very, it was plain to see in retrospect how my life went down, right? And so one day I realized that something had to give, because I could not do this anymore. And what I did was 2 things. I went to the gym every single day, which I hadn't. I was like in the world. I was a track star, sort of the star I'm using very loosely. But I get to the first day and I'm like on the treadmill, almost fall off, right? So I was really out of shape. But I committed to just going. Just go. Just go and you'll do something, right? And then I felt a little better, and then better, and better, and better. And I was like, oh, it's my behavior that's making this difference. That's the definition of optimism. Your behavior matters. So it was great for me. But the other thing was fact-checking. Oh, you're stressed about your job? You feel anxious about this? You're worried about that? Let's sit down and talk about it. And I had to have these conversations with myself. I still have my lists. It's amazing how that can really transform our thinking. And then I do want to share with you one other thing, and I'm sorry, I know I'm almost out of time. But one other thing is when Sean and I met, and then we very quickly after that decided we wanted to try to get pregnant, I was 34 years old, so I'm about to hit doomsday, right? 35 years old. It's like you walk off a cliff or something. If you Google pregnancy rates, and it's just so depressing when you start to look at the data, and I'm a data person, right? And so the one statistic that's everywhere is ladies, ages 35 to 39, after 1 year of trying, 30% of you will not be pregnant. That's depressing, right? And so I said, I can't imagine this number seems too high. I don't know. And I'm always a skeptic. So I ended up finding this wonderfully well-done article in The Atlantic. A psychology researcher had the same questions. And she fact-checked that story. Guess what? That statistic, while it was reported in the journal Reproduction, very prestigious journal, when you go to the citation and then look from where it came from, the original study was based upon French birth records from the years 1670 to 1830. They didn't have electricity or cars or antibiotics or anything, right? And definitely not IVF. So it's not to say that we still collectively as women will not have some challenges in this department, and they're very real for some people. But holding on to that depressing statistic doesn't help motivate us to take all of those actions that could help improve our chances. When you look at modern medicine, the studies are significantly more hopeful. 30%? No. It's something like 18 or 12%. It's really, really small. And knowing that helps move us forward. The information that our brain focuses on has tremendous influences on our results. So, and this last strategy, this is to build support provision. I hope you guys will do this today. Do it via text message, via email, Facebook message, LinkedIn, Twitter. I don't know. I tweeted at someone the other day. He wrote me back. He's like some famous comedian, and I was like, through the moon, so happy. This is just sending a 2-minute email praising or thanking someone in your social support network. This is at the cornerstone of broadcasting happiness. Tell somebody that you know, a friend, family member, colleague, in just 2 minutes, why they're meaningful to you, how they've helped you in your life. Praise them or thank them for something simple and beautiful that they're doing, right? And we write it in a very specific way, 2 minutes, because if you're like me, the first time you set out to do this with like minimal instructions, I was like, oh, I wrote my mom this really long email. It was beautifully crafted. It took me forever. And I sent it off. She cried. It was awesome. And then the next day I was like, oh, that was exhausting. I cannot do that again. So instead, save yourself the trouble. Just we've researched this. It just takes 2 minutes to transform your mindset and the other person. A couple lines, right? And do it in the morning. Before you look at your email, just hit compose and send that puppy off, because you will benefit from it the rest of the day. We also get nice notes in return sometimes, but that is not why we do it. Just an added benefit. The reason this is so powerful and the reason why this builds support provision is that you are deepening the greatest predictor of long-term levels of happiness that we have in the research, which is our levels of social support. When we meaningfully activate the people in our social network by praising them, by thanking them, by, you know, talking about how you're grateful for them, all of a sudden your brain starts to see after day 2, 3, 4, oh my gosh, there are all these amazing people who love and care about me, right? It's transformative. So when we can do this, we not only affect other people, but ourselves as well. Okay, so in closing, I just want to share 2 things. First of all, you remember, so you remember that success scale? I want you guys to take it, and whenever you want. And I also want you to have the key takeaways and a handful of other resources waiting for you in your inbox. If you want to snap a picture, great. You can open up your email right now. And the key is send me a blank email. To start at broadcastinghappiness.com. It'll send you an autoresponder with all kinds of links and resources. I want you guys to have all of this, and I also want you to stay in touch. In closing, I just wanted to share with you one story that I absolutely love. This is so inspirational for me. So Sean and I worked with a guy who sold his company for $100 million. And you'd think he'd be so happy, right? Got it all set, $100 million. That night at 2 in the morning, he had a nervous breakdown. And his wife was like, oh my goodness, what is going on with you? Are you okay? Let's talk this through. So what had happened was he devoted so much energy to his business that he basically neglected his family. He didn't really have a close relationship with his wife anymore. They were arguing when he was stressed. He had 2 daughters, a teenager and a 5-year-old. Didn't really get to spend much time with them, felt disconnected there as well. And so when he basically overnight lost the one major meaning marker in his life, right, he freaked out. And so he was convinced his wife was going to divorce him, and said she turns to him at that 2 in the morning and says, honey, I'm not divorcing you, but put your sneakers on, we're going out for a walk. And so she took him for a walk, and she said, look, things have not been working. We need to refocus, because yes, otherwise, if we don't do this, I'm going to divorce you and take half your money. And so what they decided to do was they went to the local track, the local high school with the track, and they walked around the track, and she said, let's just talk about what we're grateful for. Go. And he said, it was actually, and he was very overweight. It was a fast food company. He'd eaten too many of his own sandwiches. And he said it was actually harder to talk about what he was grateful for than it was to walk around the track that night. And it was hard to walk around the track. And so, but at the end of the evening, he felt a little bit better. And so the next night when she suggested the practice, he said, okay, yeah, sure. Okay, I'll do it. Let's go. And each night over the course of the next 2 weeks, they went out and they talked about their gratitudes. And so at the end of the 2 weeks, he's like, honey, I am feeling significantly better. I feel significantly more close to you, closer to you. And you know what? I've got an idea. Let's do this at the dinner table and force our daughters to take part. She's like, you're really worrying with me with that word force. I don't think so. So anyway, he went to the dinner table and suggested this, and the five-year-old thought it was cute. The older girl, the teenager, just rolled her eyes at the whole thing, and they really weren't participating. They said, okay, fine, well, we're just going to do it, and if you guys want to jump in, great. If not, that's fine, too. Cut to 2 weeks later, he gets a phone call from another dad at the school, and the dad says, I need to talk to you about your teenage daughter and what she did the other night at the sleepover. And he's like, oh, are you kidding me? Boys, drugs, alcohol, all of it, what do we do? And he said, so your daughter decided to sit all the girls down in a circle together. She felt that the girls at school had been exceptionally mean to one another recently, and so she got them to go around and say nice things about one another. I loved it, right? And so I think this is such an amazing story that reminds us that sometimes when we broadcast our positive mindset, when we broadcast happiness, we don't even know how far that ripple effect can go. Have confidence, especially ladies, as women. I know sometimes it's like, oh, if I'm positive, people are going to think I'm stupid, right? No. The smartest woman is the one who, you don't have to be a cheerleader. You can do it with a calm tone, but is positive and empowered and strong and ready to take action where we need to take it. We can rewrite the fabric of our lives by focusing our brains on the positive, all the amazing stories we have, all the great things going on, and I think ultimately that's how we transform our families, ourselves, and our communities. You all are amazing. Thank you so much.